It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We talk now with the co-authors of Feeding Littles and Beyond, 100 Baby-Led Weaning-Friendly Recipes the Whole Family Will Love. That's the name of the book. We explore how to make mealtime more inclusive for the youngest and oldest at the table. And it's said that little ones may need 20 or more exposures to a food to even give it a try. And we're not supposed to be discouraged if they don't make an attempt the first time. Join in on the transition to solid foods, what it was like for your baby, 800-642-1234. Co-author Judy Delaware is here, occupational therapist and feeding specialist. Judy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Hello, Wisconsin.
Oh, good morning. And Megan McNamee is a registered dietitian nutritionist focused on maternal and child nutrition, food sensitivities, and eating disorder prevention. Megan, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Megan, you have the floor first. Introduce us to baby-led feeding or baby-led weaning, as it's also called, and the philosophy behind it.
Sure. And I think the term weaning can be really confusing for us in the United States when you hear baby-led weaning, because in the rest of the world, weaning means starting solid foods. In the U.S., it means stopping breast or bottle feeding. So a lot of times when people in the U.S. hear baby-led weaning, we just tell them to think baby-led feeding or infant self-feeding. And essentially what it means is letting your baby feed themselves from the start. Let them pick up their own food, bring it to their mouth, chew and swallow eventually. And it's a process. It's something that takes a lot of time. They don't necessarily figure it out on the first try. But over time, what's really cool about it is it allows babies to have independence around food, learn how to safely chew and swallow, and get exposed to a lot more textures and flavors this way.
Judy, you know, at 6 months, you know, that's a little one. And I would imagine, you know, you have to be very careful what you're putting on that tray in front of that baby. You call it the squish test. Can you explain what is appropriate at such a young age?
Absolutely. Great question. So what's appropriate is you want to start with something that is long and that can fit into the palm of a baby's hand. So we actually do something that is almost less intuitive, and that is you give them a longer strip. And because that longer strip is in their palm, what they're doing is they're grabbing it, getting it into their mouth, and just gnawing at it to start with. And the squish test is really anything that you can put between your index finger and thumb and squish it and turn it into a soft, you know, soft mush. That's what you want to be able to give your child. And it is soft because they'll put it into their mouth and squish it back on their back molar area where the teeth will eventually erupt.
Parents immediately think about concerns around choking and gagging. What should you look for? Megan, go ahead.
Sure. I think this is the scariest part about feeding a baby in general. And I want to emphasize, you know, one thing we teach all the time is that gagging is a normal part of learning how to eat. It's concerning for people to see for the first time because we don't usually watch adults gagging. But Judy likes to talk about it as kind of similar to a cough, an oral protective mechanism. It's essentially where the food is propelled forward in their mouth by their tongue because the gag reflex has seen that it's too big to pass. So what gagging is a baby chews something or tries to chew something but doesn't chew it enough and they try to swallow. Mm. And the body says, nope, this is not safe. This is not a safe texture. And the reflex automatically kicks in and pushes that food back forward. So people get really freaked out about gagging, but it's actually a really wonderful, amazing way of a baby's body protecting themselves. It's very different than choking. The main difference and the reason you know it's different is that gagging involves sound because air is passing. There is no obstruction of their airway. So when a baby gags, you'll hear a little, this is kind of funny to do it, you know, on air, but it's a sound and you can hear sound as they breathe. Gagging should be a very short period of time. There is no airway obstruction, and you should see the food come further forward in their mouth or you'll see them spit it out. Babies are not bothered by it. It's kind of funny. when we see it for the first few times, we're like, what? You know, we train our clients to be, you know, calm and watch. You're listening for sound and you're watching your baby. But babies don't care. They're fine with it. They gag and then they keep going. They just keep going. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing this. The thing that's funny about gagging is the more babies gag and learn how to chew, the less they gag and the more you kind of get used to it. So it's a finite period of time where they're gagging frequently. Usually gets better within the first 1 to 2 weeks. If babies are gagging very, very frequently still after that, and it's not improved, that's when you would want to talk to your doctor, because we would start to make sure that there's nothing else going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Judy, what are you thinking about when you talk to people about choking and gagging?
I want to teach parents what to look for in their child. If you look at your child and they're just gagging and their air, just the way Megan had described it, if air is coming back and forth and the child just looks like they're just trying to get that out of their throat, out of their mouth, they are doing fine. But watch the baby for any signs of, are they getting into distress? Do they look like they're struggling? And if they're beginning to struggle, then parents need to kind of take that next move of let's slow things down with what we're doing with feeding and move in a little bit slower direction.
We're talking about a new book that focuses on infant feeding. It's called Feeding Littles and Beyond. Co-authors Judy Delaware here, Megan McNamee with us. Judy is an occupational therapist, Megan registered dietitian nutritionist. You can join in on this journey to solids and what you've experienced, what you're going through now with your toddler and food. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Judy, you know, I have 4 kids, and when my twins were little, I was really having to lean in more to the pureed foods just to get through the day. And I'm just wondering, how do you feel about spoon feeding blended food? What should we think about?
I think that spoon feeding, especially when you have a set of twins, is efficient, and you have to start with what's comfortable in your family and what you would like to be able to do with your kids. And as long as kids don't linger within those purees, I think purees have a place in, you know, the beginning of feeding with some children, as long as that's not where you stay, because it's really easy to get stuck in we're only doing purees. And in my private practice, many times kids will go in for their 12-month checkup, and you know, the pediatrician will ask, how's feeding? Oh, we're doing fine. And then you don't really go back to see the pediatrician until 18 months. And if they're still stuck on purees, that's when it's a little bit more complicated of moving a child into doing more solids at that stage, because that's all they've known. So I think my best words of wisdom are, don't linger. If you're starting with purees, it's totally fine. You know, we eat purees all the time in our regular diet, and it's just a matter of the timing of introducing that child before they're 9 to 10 months to other solids.
What's really cool, too, is there's efficiency when the whole family can eat from a recipe that is not just for the infant or not just for the adults. And Megan, can you talk about how you can reimagine your recipes so that they are applicable to those little ones?
Sure. I think we've gotten caught up thinking that babies can only eat single ingredient, very simple, bland foods. And then we get frustrated when our toddlers only eat single ingredient, simple, bland foods. And it's such a challenge for a lot of parents to think about making multiple meals, thinking, you know, they have to make something for themselves too. And then maybe they have an older child, or in your case, multiple kids, and now they have to make something for baby. So what we recommend is one meal for everyone when possible. Obviously, if it's unsafe for your child to eat, or it's super spicy and they're not into spicy yet, or whatever, there are, or I know, allergies, there's a lot of exceptions to that. But that's kind of why we wanted to write this cookbook, is because we wanted parents to see that everyone could be eating the same meal potentially. When you modify it for your baby, you want to make sure that it's in a shape they can pick up. So Judy had referred to that sticker strip shape. That's because your baby can't open their palm very well. So they hold on to the strip at the bottom, and then the strip of food pokes out the top of their hand, the top of their fist. So as long as it's a shape they can pick up and it's soft, it's something that your baby can enjoy. We want to also be aware of very salty foods. Salt is okay for babies to have. We just don't want to heavily salt all of their foods because they have more immature kidneys. And then we want to be aware of, you know, anything that might be a choking hazard. So anything, we kind of teach our clients this, if it's a perfect sphere shape, smooth and spherical, like a grape, cherry, or cherry tomato, that needs to be modified into a cutting into quarters lengthwise. If it's really hard, like a nut, a whole nut, or, you know, a raw apple or a raw baby carrot, you would need to blend it down, like it, turn it into nut butter, or for a carrot or an apple, you'd need to soften it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's really sticky, like a glob of peanut butter or a marshmallow or a gummy bear. I know a lot of people aren't necessarily giving their babies those foods yet, but anything that just seems hard to chew for your child, or something that you're uncomfortable with, you don't have to give to them. But if you think about what you eat, so say right now, say this morning, you're having oatmeal with blueberries and maybe some almond butter stirred in, something like that. Your baby can have that. You can literally dump it on their high chair tray or put it in a, you know, a non-breakable bowl and let them use their hands to scoop it. Or you can put it on loaded spoons. So you put the spoon in the food and hand it to your baby, and they bring the spoon to their own mouth and feed themselves that way. But even things like, say you're having chicken for dinner, maybe like chicken, potatoes, and broccoli. Your baby can eat these foods because they're in a shape they can pick up. So you'd cut it into a strip, and they're soft. So you'd make sure you cook it till it's soft. And that way your baby can eat the same foods that you're eating, and you don't have to go through the trouble of making something different.
Co-authors of Feeding Littles and Beyond, that's registered dietitian nutritionist Megan McNamee and occupational therapist Judy Delaware, they're here. You can join the conversation, share your experience feeding babies and toddlers, what worked, what didn't, best solid food feeding advice that you received. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Your baby is ready for solid foods, so now what? We discuss feeding babies as early as 6 months of age through what's called baby-led feeding, bypassing the baby spoon into mouth via the pretend airplane with your sound effects method. You know that one. So join in on the solid food transition. What's worked for your approach? 800-642-1234. Co-authors of the new Accessible Family Cookbook, Megan McNamee and Judy Delaware, are here. Judy, I appreciated your stress on letting babies be messy. Let the mess happen and have their food just everywhere. Can you expand on that mess and what should we think about?
Yes. And simply put, if they can't feel it in their own hands, they're going to be less likely to put it into their own mouths. So just when you think that you understand what feeding is all about and you give control to your baby, be prepared that they are going to show you what they can do once you allow them to get their hands into the food. Think about what that looks like. Yes, indeed, it's a mess, but I call it a short-term, you know, kind of inconvenience for the long-term payout. The more your child learns to be able to touch things and feel things, they explore it, and their signal back to their brain says, oh, this is soft and mushy, even though it doesn't look like the last soft and mushy food that they had. So it gives them the opportunity to create that brainwave back to their stomach and say, I'll give this a go. So the more mess that they can have in the beginning, the better feeder down the road they'll be.
I appreciated the tip of being gentle in cleaning them up and you know, even bringing a bowl of warm water to the high chair and letting them play in it. Because they can also be really, they can also, when they get that messy, they could know what's coming, and cleanup isn't always fun.
That's right. And the more the child learns to be able to be independent from the very beginning, where it's their hands doing it, they're laying down that pathway, hand to food, hand to mouth. And just think about how often we do that in a daily basis of, you know, bringing our hands to our mouth to be able to feed ourselves, because we are truly, you know, professional feeders and eaters. So the more opportunity the child gets, the more proficient they'll become. And yes, and playing with the water gives them the opportunity of something safe. You know, that's a great way to be able to do a cleanup as well, because the more the child associates positive experiences in the high chair and on your lap, in the feeding, you know, chair, the more they're going to look forward to what's about to happen in the next steps of feeding.
Megan, we heard from Mike and Slinger called and couldn't stay with us. And Mike said that they used a baby food grinder. Mike's kids ate everything they ate, and Mike would put anything in the grinder, vegetables, meat, grind it up. Mike isn't sure if they even make those anymore, but it really helped their kids. What would you say about grinders like that?
They do make those baby food makers still. And I think it kind of goes back to what Judy says. As long as you don't linger in that stage too long of grinding up all of the foods your baby eats, it's great to use them if that's what makes you feel comfortable. The reason why we want babies to try different textures is because they're learning different skills when they eat different textures. They're learning how to chew. They're learning how to, what's called lateralize, and this is more Judy's world than mine, bring food to the side of their mouth with their tongue to chew and swallow. So if they only learn about one texture, if it's always a pureed texture, they're not branching out and kind of learning how to eat other things. But if you want to use a baby food maker, that's great too. A lot of our clients bought one, or, you know, had one already and realized they didn't need it anymore. And then they use those to make smoothies or other types of, you know, dips and things like that. It doesn't mean you can't use it for your family meals too.
It can graduate, right? We're talking about how babies can learn to feed themselves. We have the authors Megan McNamee and Judy Delaware here, co-authors of the book Feeding Little Ones and Beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Judy, you really also stress that eating together with your baby or your toddler is super important. Why is that such an area that we really need to identify and focus on?
It's all about modeling. Think about what your baby is doing from day one. They want to be you. I think the internal drive of an infant is all about learning to imitate and create their own independence. And I know that's hard for parents to think about when you have a brand new baby and, you know, you want to have that bond of doing things for them. And, you know, there's nothing more joyous than, you know, you holding that baby and putting a spoon in their mouth. I know as through my practice of what parents look forward to, but when you see that ability of them watching you and trying to be you, you realize, oh, they're just trying to do it on their own. So again, going back to the more practice they get, the more ability of them using their hands, they create their, again, those imitative pathways to their brain and their hands to their mouth. So it's just really great to be able to be that model. And the more they see, the more they will want to do just like their parents or whoever the adult model would be.
They're taking it all in the high chair. Megan, where do parents and caregivers struggle most, do you see, when starting a baby on solid foods? What are some of those challenges?
Sure. And this is, you know, it's very unique to each family. It depends on kind of their family dynamic and how they approach food. We have a lot of families that don't necessarily eat together. They're kind of eating, you know, standing up in the kitchen or, you know, flying between activities, which is completely understandable. Maybe they're not really cooking or they're not making meals that they're comfortable sharing with their baby just yet. Or they're really stressed about mess and it freaks them out and it kind of brings this level of anxiety to the process. This can be a shift in lifestyle. This can be, you know, hard for some families because they're not used to making dinner, sitting down, eating together, or they just really don't like seeing their baby messy or seeing the floor get messy. So just a few tips that we like to share. First and foremost, if this is a big lifestyle change for you, just remember you don't need to go all in 100%. You're not going to go from zero cooking to cooking every single night. That's just not going to work for most people. You have to be realistic. So if that means you want to do, you know, a meal delivery service, there actually are a lot of different services now that do, you know, baby-led weaning friendly foods, or maybe you cook one day and you make enough food for three days so that it's not so taxing on you mentally.
Sure.
That is okay. Parents need permission to feed their babies in a way that feels good to them. It is not a one size fits all thing.
And I want to pause right there with the tips. We have pediatric registered dietitian nutritionist Megan McNamee and occupational therapist Judy Delaware. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Did your child refuse to try any new foods? So one of my twins, who's 8 now, appreciates a diet of ramen noodles. He boils them himself now. Bananas, watermelon, PB&Js, and throw in some buttered toast and mom's Belgian waffles. I'm famous for them. Good measure. We're inching it when it comes to expanding his food possibilities. He has a sniff test with what's on his plate. I don't know where we went off course. Join in on food challenges with your kiddo, 800-642-1234. Occupational therapist specializing in feeding, Judy Delaware here, and pediatric registered dietitian nutritionist, Megan McNamee, they're here. New book is called Feeding Littles and Beyond. Let's bring in Courtney now in Stevens Point. Courtney, what's your situation?
Good morning. I was calling. I had a question about if you have started feeding your child with pureed foods for a couple months now. Do you have any tips on how to transition them into more of a baby-led feeding?
Courtney, thank you. Judy first.
Yeah. Hi, Courtney. Good morning. Okay, so you started with purees. You've been doing it for a little bit. The simplest way is the baby bringing the purees to their mouth yet? And if they're not, let's make certain that they're doing the hand-to-mouth pattern. They're getting that. And that you could start that as simply as putting it on a small spoon, or what we love, a product called the Gutensils, which is a really small spoon, or putting it on, I like to call them the surfboards, which are rice-based teething crackers, are putting it even on a toy where they're going to be able to bring that to their own mouth. So if they get that pattern started, that's where I would want them to begin. And if they already have that, then moving them from a puree to a little bit more of a lumpy puree and begin there. So that's where I would begin with making some transitions. Does that help a little bit, Courtney?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. If I get started with them doing that, if they don't get it right away, do I just finish feeding them like normal and try again next time? Or how long do you let them kind of try?
Yes, absolutely. And it's all about the repeated exposure and practice. And one of the things I love to talk about with parents is, when you first have a child and you're starting to work on rolling on the floor, think about how many times you lay your child on the floor and you practice them trying to get up into rolling and getting better head control and repeated exposure and experience with that. And the same thing happens with food. It doesn't just happen overnight. And I think that's where many parents just feel so frustrated, like, oh, I've already tried this, and they haven't explored more, you know, they haven't shown a lot of progress, and they need more time. Each baby has sort of their own timeline and time frame in moving forward. So exposure, continue to practice, imitate with them, and make it fun. Those are all my get started tips for you, Courtney.
But Megan, too, there is that apprehension as a parent. Are they getting the nutrition? Because they don't have that pincer grasp yet where, you know, what if they are hungry and they can't get all the food that they need?
Sure. And that's a really common worry amongst parents. The good thing is most of their nutritional needs are met by their milk alone. And really, nutritionally, solids are mainly important for iron and for obviously a host of other reasons, allergenic food exposure and sensory exposure. But when it comes to nutrition, it's mainly for iron. They need extra iron than what their milk can provide starting around 6 months. So we recommend offering high iron foods, and that can be, you know, animal-based. Usually the most absorbable form of iron is heme iron, and it comes from animal-based protein like beef, chicken, fish, but you can also get it from plant-based foods like nut butters or leafy greens that maybe you would cook down and, you know, add to their eggs, or even from fortified cereals. Even a Cheerio is a really high source of iron as well. But you don't have to worry that your baby's not getting their calorie needs met or their growth needs met, because that is still met by their milk. And milk is still the main priority. These are considered complementary foods because they complement your child's diet. They don't replace the milk that they're drinking.
Hmm. You know, we hear the words picky eater so often now, especially when our kiddo just won't go along with what the rest of the family is eating. Megan, how do you feel about the label picky eater?
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves now more than ever because nutrition is a bigger priority for a lot of families. And with social media and exposure to seeing what other people are doing, I think a lot of parents put a ton of pressure on themselves to make sure their child's eating this quote ideal diet, right? And they eat everything and they're so excited about, you know, wolfing down kale and all of these things that developmentally, if you've had a kid, they don't necessarily like. You know that. You know that those strong flavors can be really challenging for a lot of children. And I think our parents probably were okay with just giving us, you know, peanut butter jelly sandwich and calling it a day, and not worrying about that too much. But because we have a bigger focus on nutrition, which has pros and cons, right? Mm-hmm. I think we feel that we're failing if our child doesn't eat all of these things. One thing I like to remind parents of is if we call them a picky eater, or if we label them as, you know, oh, you're so much worse about food than your brother, or kind of put those labels on them, it actually can make it worse. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So try to avoid your child hearing you label them in that way, if possible. I know it's really frustrating, especially if you go to somebody's home and they're not eating and you want to be like, oh, he's really picky, she's really picky. But we like to say instead, oh, they're still learning about that food. Oh, they might not have it today, but we'll put it on their plate. Kind of trying to keep it positive so your child knows it's okay for me to not like it right now, but I might like it in the future. There's, you know, that possibility is still open.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also normal for kids to not like a whole bunch of different flavors and strong flavors and big textures yet. Parents kind of, I think, are shocked by that, especially if they've done everything quote right. You know, they gave them a million foods under the sun as a baby and they ate all the things, and then suddenly their baby or their toddler is not eating anymore. They feel like they failed, but they don't realize that biologically that's the time when children would have wandered off into the forest and eaten the poisonous berry because they're more independent. So it's theorized that picky eating is actually hardwired into young children so that they're cautious of new things that could hurt them.
We have Megan McNamee with us, registered dietitian, nutritionist, and occupational therapist Judy Delaware. They have a new book out on the transition from milk to solids and what's called baby-led feeding. You can join in on that journey, 800-642-1234. Judy, one of the food philosophies that you have that jumped out at me is you say food is food and our self-worth is not defined by the food we eat. And it seems there is so much judgment wrapped up in food, even judging babies and their parents by what the food does and, you know, by what the baby does and doesn't eat. Can you elaborate on that food philosophy?
Oh, absolutely. I think from a perspective in the very beginning of learning from a child's perspective of what things taste like from a different taste and moving like from bitter to salty to sweet, and getting them to learn those different types of food is the one of the most important things we start with. But when you think about if you're just focused on, I want my child to eat healthy, and what is healthy? And that's a term that we really just try to stay away from, because food in the beginning is just food. We want children to have the opportunity of learning different tastes and textures, and they're going to select at their own time frame what they like and how they want to be able to move that food into their repertoire. And, you know, I think we've come full circle in being able to offer different ways with our babies. And parents just need to, you know, give themselves some grace and, you know, not allow that guilt to come in. Well, I only want my baby to eat certain types of food, and then they try and their baby doesn't do as they ask them to. I think that's where things get, you know, they feel like there's some shame involved and they just feel, I don't know what to be able to do. So I think giving that baby time and practice and the ability to look at a lot of different types of foods on their plate takes more time than we all want to believe.
And Megan, what about the developing the gut, right? The healthy levels of good bacteria, because when solid foods are introduced, some food particles may go undigested. What would you say about gut issues that could arise with baby-led feeding?
The good thing about baby-led feeding is that babies slowly increase the amount of food that they eat over time. So we actually tend to see pretty good tolerance of eating. Obviously, everyone's different in their own experience, but they don't go from 0 to 100, right? They don't go from eating no solids to now, you know, multiple spoonfuls of solids. Usually it's just tastes and bites at the beginning, and then a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. So it's actually a gradual introduction of solid foods to the system. Yes, some foods might come through undigested, but you know, oftentimes they do with adults too, if you think of our friend corn. And with babies, it's usually okay as long as their tolerance is there. So gut health, you know, it's multifactorial. And we, of course, want them to also be ingesting probiotics and beneficial bacteria, but they're getting that through breast milk and formula. So we tell parents, you know, as long as your baby is setting their own pace, they're eating the amount of food that feels good to them. We're not forcing them to eat more than they want. We're letting them choose the quantity, the volume of food to eat, and they're following their own journey. Then we don't worry about it unless something comes up. It's usually not a problem for babies to, you know, start solids and transition to a lot of different types of foods and flavors.
We have baby and child feeding specialists Megan McNamee and Judy Delaware. They stay with us, co-authors of a new cookbook filled with family-oriented recipes that work for babies learning to self-feed solids at mealtime. You can join in on infant and toddler nutrition. What recipes are crowd pleasers for little ones and adults in your household? Ours, cheese tortellini soup. I could tell you about that one. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Feeding toddlers and school-age kids, it can be stressful, and especially when you've put time and effort into a recipe that in the end they just won't touch. We're getting tips on how to make mealtime less touch and go. Still time to talk about child nutrition, how you transition your baby to solid foods. 800-642-1234. Occupational therapist focused on feeding Judy Delaware here, and pediatric dietitian nutritionist Megan McNamee. They're co-authors of the cookbook called Feeding Littles and Beyond. So Judy, we tried your sheet pan of eggs over the weekend, the broccoli and the cheddar version. It was super easy and a really great way to serve it. Most of us ate it. Can you tell us your approach on some of these recipes? Oh, Judy, can you hear us?
Oops, there we go.
There we go. The mute button.
Yeah, there we go. Sorry about that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, number one, are you getting everybody involved in the kitchen? You know, no matter what the age, you can always get some kind of activity for the child to be involved in creating the meal as early as, you know, when they're 9 to 10 months, if they're standing, you know, you can help hold them on a chair or be able to get them involved with creating the meal. And there is so much involvement that once kids are involved, you know, in being able to help create the meal, that there's more, you know, investment, there's more, you know, payoff for that child to be able to be involved in eating as well. So creating the independence, creating the skills, and eating together. I love that you did that. So you said that it wasn't a hit for everybody. What happened? What happened, Kate?
I think it was the broccoli, honestly. And one of them just says, you know, I'm going to just work around the broccoli. They like the eggs, they like the cheese, you know. So it's always like, you know, someone is off, something is usually just off slightly that can make something just be either a no-go or I have to work around it. And so how do you approach that when there are, you know, more than a handful of people at the table?
Right. And you always have to remember, too, everybody's listening. So if it's a little bit of an older child, those younger kids are like taking notes saying, oh, if that's what that one said, I'm going to imitate that. They're all about imitating. But, you know, it's all about creating the memories and creating what that child is saying. And how can you gear what you say to that child about how to maybe make the next move with the food. So if they say something like, ugh, you know, maybe you have some specific ground rules about what we say at the table, you know, how to create more positive the environment for the other kids to hear, because it doesn't take much for a repeated exposure to turn sour. And getting, what if it, you know, you're playing with the broccoli and you just make it very adventurous and you say, how many trees, you know, of broccoli do you have on your plate? What can we do? You know, can we have a little, you know, stick figure or somebody, you know, like one of their plastic animals that's going to go in the tree. And so just getting that child to get involved with touching it and maybe eventually smelling it or feeling it is a good step in moving them forward. It doesn't take much, though, I know, for things to go awry when one child starts the bandwagon.
It does. Megan, what do you love about these recipes? What was your approach to them?
Sure. So I think we want to make sure to give credit where credit is due. Ali Mafucci, our co-author, is the one that created most of the recipes in this book. And she, the reason we collaborated with her is we always said, you know, we're not recipe writers. This is not our jam. We focus on our professional expertise. Ali has written 3 best-selling cookbooks already. She is a pro. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is stunning about this cookbook, she wrote all of these recipes while in her first trimester with twins.
Oh my goodness.
She already had 2 toddlers at home.
Yes,
and the
yes.
fact that she couldn't even eat them because she was so sick, but she was developing them and having everyone else taste test to help her kind of refine them is just incredible. She is so talented and these recipes are very diverse. So kind of the general approach to this was not just kid food per se. It's not all, you know, mac and cheese and nuggets. How we do have those recipes in there, but they're elevated in a way that adults like them too, without being too overwhelming to a picky or new eater. So one of the examples I love to use from the book, we have these Instant Pot, and you can make them without an Instant Pot, these chicken enchiladas, but we call them salsa kinda enchiladas because they're not made with enchilada sauce. They're made with salsa. And that's a lot more approachable for a lot of pickier eaters because it's not super spicy and it's not a really big flavor, and they might know about salsa already.
And not so salty looks as like well.
And it looks like an enchilada bake, but it's made with a little bit more familiar flavors for kids. There's a lot of tweaks like that to the book. What I also love about it is the prep times are minimal. The ingredient lists are minimal. We have a lot of just normal things in the book that we've gotten so much great feedback that people are excited that it's things that they could literally go to their cabinet right now and pull things out and make. They don't have to even go to the store for a lot of this because it's not unusual or elaborate recipes. It's things that people love. We're getting a lot of great feedback about the baked goods right now too. We have this delicious zucchini bread bake, like oatmeal bake, that people are loving.
And the scones. Peanut butter bean.
Yeah, the scones. I mean, there's so many recipes in there. And Allie, funny enough, Allie isn't even a baker per se, but she is so good at just throwing things together and incorporating vegetables and fruits and other flavors to make some interesting recipes that also are allergy friendly. That's another big thing. We've been really conscientious of allergens in this cookbook so that our allergy families can find something that they love too.
Well, I really have no segue for this, but you did mention fruits. Grapes are such a hit, and I'm especially for those early months. Do you have any tips, either of you, on removing skin from grapes in a faster, efficient way?
Well, Judy, I mean, we usually say to quarter grapes. That's the most important thing.
Uh-huh.
Quarter grapes lengthwise. So if your child's chewing them, okay, you don't necessarily have to skin them, especially as they become toddlers. The most important thing about grapes is the shape and the fact that they're, you know, juicy and squishy. That's kind of one of our choking hazard foods, those smooth, round, you know, juicy, squishy foods like the grape, cherry, or cherry tomato. You always want a quarter lengthwise. So don't get caught up in removing the skin, especially for your toddler. That's going to make you crazy. Worry more about the shape of that food, or in the case of, say, a cherry, you want to quarter lengthwise, but also remove that hard pit.
And as we wrap up here, Judy, should we be mindful at all as to whether these dishes are vegan or gluten-free or vegetarian? What about those dietary indicators?
For every child, especially under the age of one, what we really like to be able to be certain is that children have the opportunity to try everything and all the allergens and have the opportunity of eating a wide variety of colors and textures and flavors. And they begin to develop their palate for everything that can be placed in front of them. And I think it's important for families to know what is safe for baby so they can get started and having a nice foundation of different foods to begin with.
Well, Judy and Megan, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. Really.
Thanks, Kate.
It.
You did great questions. We really appreciate it.
Judy Delaware is an occupational therapist and feeding specialist. Megan McNamee is a pediatric registered dietitian nutritionist. They are co-authors of Feeding Littles and Beyond. We have a link to the book at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.